I think the Fed is cautious for two reasons. Number one is that services inflation is still pretty high. If you look at PCE and you parse it out between goods and services, year over year, goods inflation is negative like 50 basis points. So it's in deflation, but services inflation is around that 3.9% level year over year, which is pretty frothy right now.
You're listening to IBKR Podcasts. Find more conversations at IBKRpodcasts.com. Please remember, any trading discussions are for information purposes only and are not intended to portray recommendations. Please listen to further disclosures at the end of today's episode. Now, welcome to our show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to IBKR Podcast by Interactive Brokers. I'm Jose Torres, your senior economist. Today, I'm joined by Gene Goldman, the chief investment officer at Cetera Financial Group. Hi, Gene. How are you doing today?
Hey, Jose. Great. How are you doing?
Doing great. Looking forward to your outlook on markets, rates, the Fed, everything. So starting with that first question, stocks have had a tremendous run last year and so far this year in spite of rising yields. Some folks thought that after such a gangbusters year last year, maybe this year would start off a little sluggish, or maybe even a little bearish, but it's been spectacular. Can it continue?
That's a great, great question. And again, thank you for having me on your podcast. So if one thing that changed, I think changed the environment was October 27th of last year. So October 27th of last year, we had the low point of the correction in the stock market. And from that point forward, valuations were much better. And you combine the fact with the fact that the Fed alluded to the fact that they would be cutting rates in 2024. So you take that two together and you've seen the stock market rally about 25% since October 27th of last year. It's been up about 16 of the last 19 weeks. It's had a huge run. With that said, though, valuations are now a little frothy. If you look at the PE ratio on the S&P 500 on forward earnings, it's about 20.6. You can justify a high valuation with low interest rates and low inflation, but we really don't have either of those right now. So the markets are pricing in absolute perfection. So long story short to your question is that we do think that likely there'll be a pullback in the market, maybe a correction. But the good news is that we do feel that if markets come back, if markets pull back, if there's a correction, it's going to be providing some really great buying opportunities. You know, market breadth has been widening dramatically. Our base case for 2024 is no recession. The Fed, despite some comments from some of our peers out there, we think the Fed will still cut rates. Earnings recession is over. And then I think cash on the sideline, there's a lot of cash on the sideline ready to come in. So long story short, you know, our target coming into 2024 was 5,100 on the S&P 500. We breached that already. I do think stocks are ready for a little bit of a pullback, but most importantly, it'll be short-lived and create buying opportunities.
Great, great. And one thing that comes to mind there is, you know, you have that forward PE up at, close to 21. You have rates really high. And when you combine those two, you have a really low risk premium, you know. The compensation to invest in risk markets today, you know, isn't as generous as it's been historically. In fact, it's probably actually it is the one of the worst risk premiums we've had in history. And sometimes I wonder if increasing retail participation, zero day to expiry options, more global adoption to markets, you know, can support a structurally higher kind of, you know, price to earnings multiple.
Yeah, I think your point is really great. I think the big wild card is earnings. And I think that if you look at the fourth quarter, we saw earnings come in around, let's say, 4.5%, well above expectations. Earnings did well in a deflationary environment. And I think the key thing is that we think the earnings recession is over. So for 2024, earnings are expected to come in at around 11% for the S&P 500. It's pretty attractive. So despite the fact that yields are high, I do think that stocks still have an opportunity. You know, we are on the firmly in the camp that the Fed will be cutting rates. You know, one of our big themes for 2024 is the Fed goes from being a foe to a friend. You know, they raised rates last year. We think with inflation rolling over pretty quickly, rates will follow and the Fed will be forced to cut rates, which I think will be a boost to equities. I just think the near-term uncertainty and high valuations are going to create a lot of volatility for the markets.
You know, another interesting thing is a lot of the market generals have really started to deteriorate. When you look at companies like Apple, Tesla, Google, have been replaced by NVIDIA and a lot of the semiconductor names. What do you think about that kind of shift? Do you think that the laggards catch up or the leaders keep running?
Yeah, I think broadly speaking, and it's hard for me to talk about individual stocks just because, you know, we have our friends in compliance that we're watching everything. So for me, you know, I think the big trend that we pointed out late last year was that the market breadth would really widen. I mean, if you looked at last year, everyone knows the Magnificent Seven, the narrowness of the market, the high valuations of those stocks. Almost immediately, though, with the Fed seemingly planning to cut rates, you see market breadth widen. So you see small caps starting to do a little bit better, although lately it's been a little bit choppy, mid caps, and then value. One thing I found was interesting was that since the October 27 correction low, and I love going back to that point because that, you know, prior to that point, we were pretty cautious in the markets, but the valuation reset and the Fed pivot really, really, you know, allowed us to add beta to our portfolios. But I think the key point is that since the October 27th low until just recently, the number one performing sector is technology, which makes sense. Everyone's buying the AI related companies, but the number two performing sector is financials, surprisingly. And then if you look at the top five sectors performing since October 27th, of the five, three are value oriented. So I think overall the key point is that market breadth is widening. I think that's a healthy sign for the market. Again, shifting in markets are definitely a good sign going forward.
Focusing a little more on the Fed and inflation, and against the backdrop of a marketplace that's pricing in around three cuts. When the year started, we were pricing in around 6 to 7. January CPI was hot. February CPI was hot. We have Powell next week and the release of the dots. Do you think that maybe we only cut once or twice if inflation continues to settle in above 3% on CPI?
Yeah, that's a lot of questions in one question. So let's start at the beginning of the year. So the beginning of the year, the Fed said three rate cuts in their dot plot, which makes sense. The markets were pricing in 6 or 7. And we've always said 6 or 7 doesn't make sense. The economy is still too resilient. You have other people on the side, as you said, market generals have said maybe 1 or 2 cuts. We think that's still too low because remember the Fed's base case coming into 2024 was 3 rate cuts and no recession. And the Fed, you know, is seeing that inflation is rolling over. And we'll talk about those choppy January and February reports. But overall, if you look at core PCE, as we all say, the Fed's preferred measure of inflation, the Fed said in the December dot plot that it would be at 2.4% at year end. We already see core PCE very close to that already. So the inflation is already well ahead of the Fed's schedule. Yes, there's some choppiness, and you can use the old phrase, the last mile is a difficult, but whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, inflation is rolling over pretty fast, pretty quickly. I know the Fed has been cautious a little bit lately in some of their comments. You look at the Fed, the newest Fed speaker, the newest Fed voters. So you have Barkin, Bostic, Daley, and Mester. If you look at their comments, they've all been very cautious in their phrasing. So the Fed is pretty cautious. I think the Fed is cautious for two reasons. Number one is that services inflation is still pretty high. If you look at PCE and you parse it out between goods and services year over year, goods inflation is negative like 50 basis points. So it's in deflation, but services inflation is around that 3.9% level year over year, which is pretty, pretty frothy right now. And the way you reduce services inflation is you put pressure on the labor market. So the Fed is cautious because of high services inflation. But the other reason is that the Fed is really concerned about a bounce back in inflation. So like a 1970s scenario where, you know, under Paul Volcker, inflation came up, the Fed aggressively raised rates, inflation rolled over, they cut rates, and then it came back quickly again. The Fed does not want to see a sort of this double, you know, this twin peak, basically. And I think adding fuel to the fire is what you were alluding to before. Those January inflation reports were, you know, surprising. You saw CPI come in at, 3.1, and the market expected 2.9, and then PPI above expectations. Our take on those reports for January, we think those were aberrations. And Why is that the case? Because if you look at CPI, majority of that the surprise was on owner's equivalent rent. But if you look at it, at something that we tweeted, you know, recently, take owner's equivalent rent and rent of primary residence, and these two are highly correlated every month. But then in January, owner's equivalent rent just surged. We think it was an aberration or a bad data point. Then you pivot over to PPI. PPI came in above expectations due to one component, primarily hospital outpatient care. And that's a seasonality effect. Every January, it rises dramatically. So it's, so we do think at the end of the day, inflation is continuing to roll over. But more importantly, those January effects were much more aberrations. And yes, we did see some of this reverse a bit in February, but overall inflation has still come in a little bit above expectations. So long story short, we remain on the point that the Fed will be cutting rates this year. We think that the economy, though it's resilient, if you look at the lower income cohorts, they're really struggling. I think today you saw a major retailer that focuses on, you know, I can't say its name, but basically focuses around dollars. And they came out and they said that they are seeing low-income shoppers struggling dramatically. You also see with consumers $1.4 trillion of credit card debt. That's at record levels. You see interest rates for credit card debt at like 22 or 23, even 24%. That's going to put pressure on the consumers. So I think, long story short, inflation is rolling over. The economy is showing some signs of slowing down. So take all this together. We do believe the Fed cuts rates three times, as they said they would. And I think our best case is, we thought it was going to be May, but I think the report that came out yesterday for CPI suggests that June is probably the first time they cut rates.
Interesting points on the consumer. You know, corporate earnings estimates remain buoyant, but as you point out, there's, you know, some headwinds with the consumer. How do you reconcile, you know, corporate earnings increasing? Is it going to be more of a revenue growth story or more of a margin expansion? You know, for the last 15 months or so, we've seen a pickup in layoffs across corporate America, albeit hasn't really made it to the official government data in aggregate, but we've been hearing a lot of these anecdotal layoffs.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Is it going to be earnings related or margin related or even revenue related? I think earnings are going to be driven by the combination of all three. I think, you know, our base case is that the economy is not going to have a recession in 2024. But let's say I'm wrong, and let's say that we have a recession. We think at worst case scenario, it's going to be a mild recession, because we would envision a so-called sector recession, where sectors of the economy that are in recession today are going to start to stabilize, and other areas in the economy not struggling, like the consumer, are going to start to weaken a bit. So if you look at what's struggling today, housing, autos, manufacturing, but these areas are starting to recover a bit. You look at building permits are up 33% year over year. That's a sign housing market is starting to come back a bit. If you look at manufacturing, we've been in a recession for 15 straight months, but new orders for manufacturing are picking up pretty quickly. So we do think areas in the economy that are struggling are starting to do a little bit better. On the other hand, the consumer will be impacted by, as you said, you know, all these major headwinds. You take all this together, we think that the economy will be, you know, if there is a recession, it'll be a very mild recession. And I think that, you know, because the economy is more resilient than people anticipate, given this whole sector type recession, we do expect that earnings will be a little bit better expected. We do think revenues will be a little bit better expected. I know that last quarter, it was a good overall quarter from an earnings growth standpoint, but it was really driven from revenues. And I thought it was interesting. Revenues rose quarter over quarter, despite the fact we were in a disinflationary environment. That's really good news. So even if inflation rolls over a bit going forward, we expect inflation to roll over a bit, companies are doing a good job because they're actually driving growth by increasing profit margins. One thing that you can look at, it's a simple way of looking at profit margins, where they're headed, or a data point is you compare CPI relative to PPI. And if you use CPI as a proxy for business sales and PPI as a proxy for business costs, PPI has fallen at a much faster clip. That's very profit margin positive. So as you've kind of learned, I'm going all over the place, but long story short, I think revenues are going to be okay. They will slow a bit given inflation is rolling over, but profit margins, while they did take a backseat last quarter, I think they were down a little bit last quarter, they should bounce back, especially as CPI continues to, as PPI continues to fall faster than CPI.
Now to deliver, excuse me, to deliver earnings growth in the medium to long term, a huge focus for this market, of course, has been artificial intelligence. Some folks think that it's revolutionary. Others think that it's a lot of hype, sort of how the EV rally went on in 2021 and sort of how, you know, in .com we had some things that we thought would be revolutionary that weren't. What is your view on artificial intelligence?
I think AI is going to be, it's like electricity back in the late 18th century, early 19th century. It's just going to be big. We just don't know how big it'll be. I mean, in theory, we've been using AI for a long time. I mean, we've been using AI in terms of with computers, with systems, but lately we've been able to transition AI into more products and more services. I think the fundamentals for AI are pretty strong. There's my wife, for example, is a nurse, or she's studying to be a nurse. And I know that when she graduates with her degree in nursing, she's going to be able to go and get data quickly from AI and look at that and then be able to review a patient's information. So, and just think about as a lawyer today. And a lawyer, the olden days, you have to go through all those books. We can watch an old Law and Order episode and they go through all those big books and kind of going through all the documents and so on. Today, they can just run a couple buttons and they can get all this information. Or even portfolio managers today, they can go in and scrape data pretty fast, pretty quickly. So I think AI is going to be huge. The fundamentals are very, very strong. And I think I saw a study from, from McKinsey. McKinsey said that by the end of 2030, that AI should add about $1.7 to $4 trillion of annual global productivity. And that's huge. That's like the size of the UK economy. It's huge. So I think fundamentals are strong. What does worry us is valuations. Valuations have been pricing in near absolute perfection, as we learned from the dot-com bubble, which I lived through. Not everything is going to survive. There will be some pets.com. There will be some, you know, random companies that in AI that won't survive. So I think what it points to you and your listeners is AI fundamentally is strong, but it's going to be a very much of a stock picker's environment. There's only certain of the big companies are going to do well. Not every company will do well. Excuse me.
Moving on to the banking sector and the lending environment, spreads have been really well behaved, which is tough to kind of imagine given the really tight monetary policy and the banking sector, though, is under some significant duress, particularly regionals. Are you concerned of commercial real estate and the lending environment?
Let's take a step back. So I think banks are struggling, a lot, and that's why valuations are down. So if you look at a bank, you know, the one big thing overhanging them is the inverted yield curve. So let's just say simply we take the 2 and 10 year, and in theory, as we all know, the 2 year should be below the 10 year for the long term because the 10 year you're locking in money for in theory an additional 8 years. So the yield should be less on the 2 relative to the 10. What we're seeing, it's the 2 is above the 10. At one point, it was up 130 basis points. The 2 above the 10. Right now, the 2 above the 10 is about 40 basis points. So why is this important? Well, you think about us as savers, putting money into our bank accounts. Let's just say we do that. Banks are borrowing money at a little bit higher rate from us, whether it's, yields or whatever, just to borrow money. But then they're also lending money at a lower rate. So in theory, if short-term rates are above long-term rates, this basically suggests that every transaction a bank makes on a mortgage, on a car loan, they're actually losing money. And I know I'm exaggerating. There's a lot of different, assumptions I put in there. But in theory, you think about that. Short-term yields are above long-term yields. It makes it less profitable for a bank going forward. But with that said, we all know banks make lots of money elsewhere. And one of our favorite sectors is financials. And we do believe that, I think loan loss reserves for banks were a little bit too aggressive or a little bit too, too bearish. Basically, we think the economy is going to be fine. So that's going to help financials. Also, you're seeing the M&A activity open up. You're seeing capital markets open up. You're seeing, IPOs and so on. So to your question, though, for the banking, for the commercial real estate sector, the area that worries us are those small regional banks. And you're seeing them pop up here and there because, they don't have the infrastructure. They don't have the ability to grab capital as much as the larger banks. But the good news, I think commercial real estate, we put a blanket you know, statement in all commercial real estate doesn't look that great, but it's really just the office space. Warehousing looks phenomenal. Other parts of commercial real estate are okay. And I saw something from the FDIC in their quarterly report recently, and it said that only about 103 basis points, so about 1% of gross U.S. bank loans in the real estate category is not paying on time, just 1%, like, you know, 1.03%. And I think that's pretty close to the long-term average. Yes, it's gonna weaken a bit. We understand this, but the good news, the Fed is aware of this, and part of the reason why we think the Fed will cut rates, you know, sometime this summer, because yes, the economy is resilient, but there's also things that could break that the Fed is worried about. And the Fed got a little bit of a taste of this in March of last year with those failures of those banks.
Interesting. And one thing about the regionals too, Gene, is that their cost of funds is much higher. When you mentioned the 2 and 10 year, you know, the big banks a lot of times are in a position where they actually don't even really want deposits, so they pay really low, you know, 0.5%. But the regionals, because they don't have the technology, the marketing spend, the television and radio notoriety, you know, they got to pay 2%, 3%, 4%. And then sometimes they're, in order to compensate for those higher costs of funds, they end up in the riskiest segments of lending, where large banks actually don't want to be.
Exactly. You don't see regional banks doing commercials in the Super Bowl. So you know, they don't do that. So.
Yeah, and I think overall, I think you'd agree that it just points to just more consolidation in the sector. I worked at the FDIC for about 3 years, and that's just a trend that we continuously watch, was just the bigger banks getting bigger and the smaller banks consolidating and getting acquired and merged and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that's a great point. So as part of my team, we also have a recommended list of mutual funds and money managers and so on. And we've talked a lot of small cap value managers, and small cap value managers usually are diving into regional banks. And a lot of them, I'll ask, well, why are you, I know why you're underweight small cap, regional banks, but why do you even have any positions? And a lot of them are still buying them because they have to own them to be closer to the benchmark. So I think I do worry about regional banks. The only counter argument you can look at is that we've seen a lot of insider buying of executives at regional banks buying in. So if you think that executives are a leading indicator, that suggests that maybe the worst could be over for regional banks. But again, you know, Jose, as you and I are talking, there's so much information out there. There's so many ways that this could pivot. And I think this is what the Fed discusses behind the scenes. They know that this is a concern, especially the office space the office space basically of commercial real estate. And they're worried about what could take place if they keep rates higher for longer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Excuse me. So you mentioned value, small cap value, and wondering how you're envisioning equities overall, any particular categories that you see more favorable than others in terms of large cap, mid, small, or sectors, value growth tilts sure. that you think are the most appealing?
Yeah. Thank you. And then if you take a step back, position, sort of what our broad perspective is. And our broad perspective is, you know, long-term, we're optimistic on the markets. But near-term, given what we talked about with valuations, with increasing risks, that we do think a pullback, a correction is likely. And with this in mind, we're sort of positioning our portfolios a little bit more cautious right now than we traditionally would be. So what that means is that we have liquid alternatives. So those are those investments that zig when the rest of the markets are zagging. We're also much more diversified than we usually are. And then with that said, though, if you look at how we're positioned today, you know, we're overweight value versus growth. I think a lot of people look at the economy right now and they say, well, the economy is growing, so you buy growth. Well, that's actually the opposite. When the economy starts to slow down, you want to buy growth, because usually investors are searching for earnings growth, so they buy growth in a slowing economy. But we like value, and so value, you get exposure to the materials, industrials, you know, healthcare, for example, great sectors we think will do well. I think also with value, by overweighting value, you mitigate some of the risk that the benchmarks are really overweight growth right now. And then, you know, we do these analyses where we look at our portfolios, we're significantly overweight value, but then if you run a a cross analysis of your holdings based where overweight growth. So I know I'm getting into the weeds and I apologize, but we try to mitigate some of that exposure. We also like small caps. I mean, I think small caps are super, super cheap right now. Lots of concerns about the economy for small caps, but again, the economy, in our opinion, will be better than expected, but valuations are extremely cheap. And I also think if small caps, if you look at earnings for 2025, small cap earnings should exceed large cap earnings. And eventually the market will price these events in 6 to 9 months in advance. And then the area we're underweight is we're underweight international today, but we're starting to look at those potential areas, especially if the dollar weakens. You know, I think Europe is a little attractive. In, you know, I know that pricing is, valuations are pretty high right now in Europe. Again, they were cheaper. They've gotten better despite having a recession in Germany, but you're starting to see a little bit of a pickup in some of the data, especially in Europe, especially in Germany. And then Japan, we like Japan a lot. And from a non-US standpoint, so with Japan, you've got inflation coming back. You know, haven't seen this in like decades. You also see less cross old holdings ownership, and you see, you know, decreased regulations. All this together suggests that Asia and non-US should do well. But right now we're still underweight until we get a little bit more of a clarity in terms of what the Fed is doing. And this will help us in terms of the dollar driving, dollar weakening, which should drive international investing. So I know I went all over the place. Again, I apologize. I feel like I'm the babbling podcast.
No, we love that. We love that. You know, we love that. That's our bread and butter. You know, one thing, a final question. One thing that the bears have been talking about is, because you mentioned Japan, is the Bank of Japan, the BOJ, going against negative rates and shifting them back into positive territory, perhaps next week. As you mentioned, the Nikkei, the Japanese benchmark, is pretty much hit like a double top, you know, just exceeded its, I think it was a 30-year high or something like that.
Yep.
If Japan goes into positive territory, you know, what impacts do you think that'll have overall? And specifically, I know a lot of questions here again. Like I said, we love that. And specifically, if you can shed a little bit of light on China and emerging markets, which have really suffered at the expense of developed markets rallying sharply.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions going on in there. So, I think Japan, you know, again, we're underweight non-US, but we are finding opportunity. We're just looking for a better entry point, I guess. And I think the trigger will be the weaker dollar. Japan overall, Japan is benefiting from friendshoring, and they're also benefiting from some structural changes to their economy in terms of workers, in terms of infrastructure. So I think Japan is still a very attractive area, especially as you see companies moving to Japan. To avoid sort of the China, I don't know, the China syndrome, I guess you could call it. So I think Japan has opportunities. Now, if you look at China, I think China is a concern to us. And I think it's also for the markets. I think at one point China was what, like 40% of the emerging market index. And today it's at 26%. I think China, the problem is that, you know, you've got the speculative property bubble, you have aging demographics with their old one-child policy from 1980 to 2015. All this taken together just creates a lot of risks. And China, although they won't admit it, they were probably in a recession. But the good news is that you're starting to see some Chinese data start to improve a bit. Like you saw inflation turn positive in China just recently, I think just last month. You know, that's good news because, you know, they've been such a deflationary environment. Having a slight uptick in inflation is good, suggesting there's a greater demand. And I think in February, I think Chinese exports rose sharply. So the Chinese economy is, you know, it's out of favor, but it's starting to come back. But if you take a look at emerging markets overall, it's not just China anymore. So one thing I always point to is Mexico. So Mexico, right now, if you look at Mexican exports to the United States and Chinese exports to the United States, we are now importing more from Mexico than we are from China for the first time in two decades. And so it's not just China as the emerging market, it's other parts of the economy for emerging markets. So emerging markets are pretty attractive. Parts of it are pretty attractive, but we're watching carefully because, again, things are starting to, everything is changing so much and so quickly. I think I got all your questions, right?
Yeah, you did. You did. Okay, that was okay. Great. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. And thank you to our guest, Gene Goldman, Chief Investment Officer at Cetera Financial Group. It was a great talk. Thanks so much for being here, Gene.
Thanks, Jose. Thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate this.
Thank you, everyone, for joining this great conversation. Don't forget to rate us and subscribe, and I look forward to next time. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to IBKR Podcasts. As always, we have more episodes at ibkrpodcasts.com. And if you're interested in learning more about interactive brokers, visit ibkr.com. We offer more trading education material, such as webinars at ibkrwebinars.com, financial and economic commentary at tradersinsight.news, market-related courses at tradersacademy.online, and quant-related articles at ibkrquant.com. The analysis in this material is provided for information only and is not and should not be construed as an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy any security. To the extent that this material discusses general market activity, industry or sector trends, or other broad-based economic or political conditions, it should not be construed as research or investment advice. To the extent that it includes references to specific securities, commodities, currencies, or other instruments, those references do not constitute a recommendation by IBKR to buy, sell, or hold such investments. The material does not and is not intended to take into account the particular financial conditions, investment objectives, or requirements of individual customers. Before acting on this material, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and is necessary, seek professional advice. Options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. For more information, read the characteristics and risks of standardized options, or ODD, which may be accessed through the link found in the show's notes or podcast description page.